This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Parshas Beshalach. So I want to share with you some very beautiful ideas. Shabbos Shira. This week's Parsha, of course, contains the Shira. The Pasuk says, Oz Yoshe, Moshe, V'nei Yisrael, as B'nei Yisrael come out of Mitzrayim, they go through the Yam Suf and they sing the Shira. There is a problem in the very words, Oz Yoshe, Moshe. What is the problem? The problem is a basic rule of grammar. Oz Yosher is a future tense. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu, why is he describing this song in the future tense? They're singing it now. So Rashi tells us, Oz, Kashero Hanes, the explanation is, when Moshe Rabbeinu saw the miracle that the Yam Suf split and the whole of Bnei Yisrael went through, Olo B'libo Yosher Shira, it sort of entered his heart to sing the song, and therefore it's Yosher in the future. Sort of as a result of that miracle, he entered his heart to sing a song in the future. That's how Rashi deals with this problem, and that's perhaps also why Yosher is in the singular, that Moshe Rabbeinu had this thought and therefore he would sing in the future. Says Rashi, Zeu liyashe pshutai, that's the poshut explanation based on pshat. Avul, says Rashi, midrashay omru, the medrash says, Rabbi Seinu Zichrin Livrocha, Mikan Remez Tchias HaMesim in HaTorah. It says, Rashi, this is a source for Tchias HaMesim in HaTorah. What does that mean? That this will indicate that all in the future, all souls that have departed will also sing. Those who are merit to have Tchias HaMesim will sing in the future. This Rashi is a very powerful Rashi, and it was said, it was brought by the Belzer Rebbe in 1944. The Belzer Rebbe at the time was Rabbi Aaron Rokach, the famous Belzer Rebbe. He was the Rebbe during the war years. He suffered terrible personal tragedy. He escaped Europe. His wife and children were killed. And I know my Chavrusa, who I learned in the mornings, his uncle was the Hausbacher with Rabbi Aaron. And he was known as a malach. The stories about him are just that he didn't eat, didn't sleep. He was sort of, the Lubavitcher Rebbe said he was surah, he was chomer b'lo surah. In other words, he didn't have any, in other words, he was just a ball of energy without sort of physical limitations. And anyway, he, in 1944, he arrived in Eretz Yisrael. And he arrived in Haifa and he spent his first Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael in Haifa, Parshas Beshalach, 1944. Who was he with? Bell's Hasidus in those days was not like it is nowadays. Nowadays, Bell's is a powerhouse. Tens of thousands of Hasidim with that beautiful Bell's Beis HaMedrash in Yerushalayim. But in those days, it was a handful of people who had survived the war. Bell's was destroyed in the Second World War. And he came to Eretz Yisrael with a handful of people sitting around a table in Haifa that Friday night. And he wanted to conduct the Tish. But the people he sent were not in the mood. They had also suffered terribly, and they were survivors, and their lives had been ripped apart. And he says they were not in the mood to have a joyous tish of singing, of sharing the Torah, of stories and inspiration. So the Rabbi Aaron Rokach mentioned this Rashi, and he said something fascinating. He said earlier in the parasha, the Pasuk says that when Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says, V'chamushim olu. So Rashi famously says, Tu pshotim and chamushim olu. I've got it on the sheet here. That Rashi says, Chamushim Olu. If you are listening online, please email me at j.golker@gmail.com. I'll send you the sheet. The first pshat is they came out armed. The second pshat is that only one-fifth of the Klal Yisrael came out. Well-known pshat. But just think about the practicalities of that. If you've got 600,000 Jews between the ages of 20 and 60, and an equivalent number of women, and people over the age of 60, and children under the age of 20, you're talking a nation of, happily, of 3 million people, 2 to 3 million people easily. So if 3 million people came out, that means 12 million didn't. So every person who came out, ultimately they were survivors and had suffered loss and knew people who didn't make it. So when they got to the other side of the Yam Suf, they also were not in the spirit, in the mood to start singing. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu tells them now, don't worry, the Jewish story is not defined by the past, but it's very much defined by the future as well. And all the neshamas who have not survived, they will merit to relive again at Tchias HaMesim. Oz Yoshe, this is a remez for Tchias HaMesim. It was an effort of Moshe Rabbeinu to sort of inspire and to rejuvenate the Jews who have emerged from Mitzrayim, that had witnessed everything they had witnessed, but they were very much aware of the fact that 4/5 didn't make it out. So therefore, it was a timely reminder of the Jewish belief of Tchias HaMesim to try and restore their spirits. Fabulous idea. And that is what Rabbi Aaron Rokach said in 1944 to restore the spirits of the very different bells of Hasidus that we have to nowadays. Now, I want to share with you a beautiful Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer on the Shira makes the following point. Let's look inside. We'll work it through inside. It's a fabulous piece. Says the Chasam Sofer, "Batan lohem Miriam shiru l'Hashem ki goy ga'osus v'roich v'yom v'yom." That Miriam as well, it wasn't just the men who sang, Miriam led the women in joyous song. Says the Chasam Sofer, "Yesh l'hakshos." You can ask a question. "Loma omra Miriam shiru rak al puronius ha-mitzriyim." It's a great question. The Pasuk says, "Batan lohem Miriam shiru l'Hashem ki goy ga'osus v'roich v'yom v'yom." Miriam is referring to the downfall of the Mitzriyim. Why does she join in the song at this particular point? Why didn't she join in the song, the earlier part of the song? With your chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you led the people that you redeemed. Why didn't she join in for that as well? Second question. V'nira, de'isa b'medrash. He quotes a very obscure medrash, not a well-known medrash, I think. That the Baalei Tosfos, I think, quotes, "Omru Malachi Asharis, im anoshim kidmu lanu lo mashira." Say the Malachi Asharis, if the men merit to sing before us, the Malachim, "Noshim lo kidmu lanu," why did the women have to get in there before us as well? Balzer, and in response to that accusation, as it were, that question, "Batan lo Miriam," Miriam replied, the Malachi Asharis, she responded with that song. Says the Chasam Sofer, "V'yesh lahavin ma'onso b'zel malachi asharis v'tamua." What is going on? What exactly is the question of the malachim? That, okay, the men have to go in before us, but the women as well? And the Miriam responded, and she responded by singing this song, etc. What's going on? Third question. Says the Chasam Sofer, "V'nakdim tchilas liyashiv kushas teis al Rashbam." There's a famous question that Tosfos asks on the Rashbam. It's a Gemara in Megillah Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, in the context of the Megillah reading, please God, we're a month away from it. So, Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, "Noshim chayovus b'Megillah." The Gemara says that in Megillah, in the name of Rabbi Shua ben Levi, women are obligated to read the Megillah. Why? Now, of course, we know there's a mitzvah which is man grama, women are normally parted from it. But yet, the women are chayiv in Megillah. Why? It's a time-bound mitzvah. I haven't got a chiyuv to read the Megillah tonight. Come Purim, I can read the Megillah. So why are women chayiv? Says the Gemara, "Sha'af hein hoyu ba'is hanes." They were also involved in the miracle. V'chein or Rishu ben Levi gamam arba kosis v'nei Chanukah. The same reason is given for dalet kosis. Even though Pesach dalet kosis is a time-bound positive mitzvah, women are chayav in it. Why? And so too ner Chanukah, says the Rashbam, because "af hein hoyu ba'is hanes." What does that mean? A mafarish Rashbam, "She'ika hanes nas al yedehen." Means that the main part of the miracle was performed through the women. But Purim Ali Day Esther, Purim was of course Esther, but Pesach is Chus Noshim Sitkonius, it was the righteous women that in their merits we were redeemed from Mitzrayim. V'chanuk Ali Day Yehudis, it was the women who were the protagonists, they played the central part. V'hiksha B'Tosfos. Now Tosfos there in Megillah asks a question on this Rashbam. Lefi Zeh, if your explanation is that the women play the central part, then my af hein hoyu. What does it mean they were also there? Doesn't af suggest a subordinate role? The af hein b'mash meloshen tfeila, it's sort of a secondary role. Halo ikanes nas aladein. It's a teisa asakash on the Rashbam. What does it mean af hein hoyu b'isanes? Surely the af suggests they were tofer, they were secondary. Fine. So we've got three questions. Question number one, why did Miriam sing at this point? Why did she sing at the retribution of the Mitzriim, not at the salvation of Klal Yisrael? Question number two, what is the explanation of this Medrash, where the Medrash tells us that the Malachim said, okay, the men are going, they've got to jump in before us to sing, but the women as well. And Miriam responded, what's the explanation of this medrash? And third of all, this concept of af hein hoy bais hanes, Tosfos kasha on Rashbam, if the Rashbam says that it means that the miracles were performed through the women, that's difficult because it's af hein hoy bais hanes suggests that they were tough or they were secondary to it. So let's take a look at the Chasam Sofer's answer, because with one approach, he answers all three questions. Says the Chasam Sofer, I'm at the bottom box of the page. V'yesh liyashev. V'yesh liyashev, we can answer the question, ki yodua, neis, what is a miracle? Ki neis roi lehikri masha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu meshadet hateva u'marochus shemayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of deviates from the natural world, and he sort of suspends it for a moment and he does a miracle. V'yodua, and it's well known. The teva meshubedes la Torah. Nature, teva, is subservient to Torah. Tanai hisna HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'maisa bereishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a condition with teva, with the natural world, that we're only creating the world. Amanashet sheyikablu Yisrael es haTorah. V'im lo yikablu yachzeru l'tov avayu. That if the world doesn't accept Torah, then teva goes. In other words, the whole very creation is subordinate to Torah. In Cain, therefore, kol kama de godl zechushin shal tzadikim, the greater the merit of tzadikim, meshubet hateva lehishtanes l'tzorchom l'tevosom. The greater your connection to Torah, the greater zechus you've got, the more nature is subservient to you. Umimela, and therefore, Hanes spats musoi koton, the nes is therefore going to be small, ki mucher chubateva, because that's you know, it's forced, it's given in the natural rules. If your merit is lower, then the miracle is going to have to be greater. In other words, when the women who had more zuchus at the time of Mitzrayim, because after all, b'zchus noshim sitkonius nimgoli Yisrael, the Mitzrayim, therefore, nature is more subservient to them. And the miracle when seas split, that's less of a miracle because nature is subservient to Torah and to people who have more zuchus because they are living according to Torah values. And therefore, says the Chasam Sofer, v'hine, next paragraph, kan, since the women's zechus is very great, it's considered much less of a miracle because the natural world is subordinate to them. And therefore the Rashbam has got a difficulty. That suggests it's tofel, they're subordinate. But they were also there, and they were in distress for Nigalu, and they were redeemed. Therefore the Rashbam explains that the ikanes was through them. And therefore, the imkain, kiven shegodu zechuson, since their zechus is so great, tikotin lohem hagula, the miracles needed for them is going to be very little, much less. Miyos likoris neis ve'ein rak tfeles neis, they're almost subordinate to the neis. V'imkain lefizeh, ein aleihem choiv kol kach le'mashira. Therefore, since the miracle is going to be much less for them, because teva is subordinate to them, therefore, they've got less of an obligation to say Shira. In other words, there are two levels of intervention over here. One is the sea split. That's amazing. The next level is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives retribution to the Mitzrayim who persecuted us. And that is level two. The women who are on a higher level, and therefore Teva is more subjugated to them, they're worthy of seeing miracles. It's not considered such a miracle. That's just almost natural, as it were. So therefore, they have no obligation to say Shira for level one. Level two, which is a much more impressive nace, that the actual perpetrators of the crime were retributed in front of them, then they say Shira for that. That's level two. And therefore, that explains all our questions. Question number one, why is Miriam saying, singing the Shira at this point? The answer is because there was no obligation to say Shira at the first part of the miracle, because they were on a much higher level, and Teva is meshubah to them. Teva is subordinate, is subjugated to them, subservient to them, and therefore there's no need for them to say Shira. But at the higher level of intervention, the level two, then they have to say Shira for that. That explains the Medrash, because the Medrash says, the Malachim are saying, hey, I understand the men, a miracle is done for them, but the women, they are on such a high level that Teva is totally a servant to them. So why do they come in before us? The answer is, Vatan lo Miriam, okay, level one I don't have to say, but level two I've got to say. That's why I need to come in here. And the third question is, what's Pshat Af Hein Hoy Bo Yisane? It's very beautiful. He's explaining, he's defending the Rashbam to the Kasher of Tosfos. Af Hein Hoy Bo Yisane means, because they played such a central part, Purim, Pesach, Hanukkah, etc., their zechus was greater, and therefore less of a miracle is actually needed, because Teva is almost owes it to them. The whole raison d'etre of Teva is in the merits of these women, and therefore they're considered tofel to the nes. That is what is meant by af hein hoy bo yisanes. It's a very beautiful chasm sofer, new insight into, for me at least, to explain these particular points. Okay, let's press on. The next idea is very beautiful personally for me, and I'll explain why in a moment. For those of you who've seen the sort of the structure, the setup of the Torah, of the Sefer Torah, if you get an Aliyah, Revi, for the Shira, you'll notice that the actual Shira in the Sefer Torah appears very differently to the rest of the Torah. The Gemara says, "Kol Hashiras Kulan Nichtovis Areach Al Gabi Levena." It's sort of a half brick over a full brick, v'levena al gabi areach, and a full brick over a half brick. What does that mean? Imagine a Sefer Torah, the columns of a Sefer Torah. You've just got sort of chunks of ksav. One column, then the next column. The Shira is different, because Oz Yoshe Moshe is the top line, is one full line. Then you've got a bit of writing, a gap, bit of writing, a gap, and then a bit of writing. Three lits of writing with two gaps. The next line, you've got gap writing, and then a bit more. You've got basically, it's the writing fills the spaces underneath. But you've got lots of gaps all over the place. And indeed, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Yeruden, Hilchos Sefer Torah, Kos of Hashira Kashar Ksav. If you wrote the Shira like other Ksav of the rest of the Sefer Torah, or vice versa, Shekos of Shar HaKsav Kashira, possible. If you don't write it properly in this sort of brick-like structure, then it's possible. What does it symbolize? What do these gaps represent? So many years ago, my wife and I had the good fortune to make a seal in our house. And we invited Dayan Aaron Trope, he should have a refuah shleima. And he spoke and he said the following magnificent idea about this particular question. What do the gaps represent? The Shira is a song of praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But sometimes a person feels so overwhelmed that he wants to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes there are no words to articulate the way a person really feels. The gaps represent exactly that. The gaps represent that feeling which is, you're not able to express it in words. Sometimes silence is golden. You know, I came across recently in the book of Tales Out of Jerusalem by Rabbi Emanuel Feldman. He's got short pieces on his experiences. I think he wrote it about 10, 15 years ago. And he's got one short piece, I think he called it The Sound of Silence, where he was in Yerushalayim, he had moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he was there for Yom Kippur. Now we know in Eretz Yisrael, let's say Yom Kippur goes out at, say, 5:45. And the chazan, who was davening Ne'ilah, committed a crime. What was his crime? One crime is to go beyond the time. That's perhaps a worser crime. But another crime is he finished 10 minutes before the Zman, 5:35. So what are they going to do for 10 minutes? 10 minutes until the fast goes out, until you can daven Maariv, lo shofar daven Maariv. So Emmanuel Feldman, who's, of course, one of the great American Rabbonim with wealth of rabbinic experience, he was wondering, is the Rav of this shul, there are 500 people in this shul in Yerushalayim, is the Rav going to stand up and speak? Is somewhere there going to be communal Tehillim saying, what's going to happen for those final 10 minutes? Rabbi Emmanuel Feldman noted that not a pin drop was heard. No one moved from their seat. Every single person in that shul stayed exactly where they were, and in total silence, lost, if you like, in that sort of otherworldly quiet of those final minutes of Yom Kippur. And he said that that silence was much louder and much more powerful than all the other aspects of Yom Kippur. Sometimes silence can be very powerful, and that's really what the gaps in the Shira represent, those feelings that words simply cannot express. Rav Moshe Shapira, I heard from Rabbi Hartman, he used to give a chabura, he gave many chaburas, and he gave a Motzei Shabbos chabura. So there was a group of elite Talmidei Chachomim around his dining room table, and one person was used to record this particular chabura. And one time he came along with a new contraption. It was a new device, but it was a voice-activated tape recorder. So he put it in front of Ramosha, and Ramosha noticed it was a new device. So he asked the fellow, what is this? So he said, it's a new, very state-of-the-art, in those days, state-of-the-art tape recorder. What's special about it? He said, it's voice-activated. That means that I press record, but it only records when you're speaking. When you pause and where there's silence is, then it doesn't record. So Moshe said to him, he says, but you're missing the main part of the shir. The silences are the main part of the shir. What a beautiful insight. You know, nowadays the air corridors, travel corridors are not open. And Miss Hashem, they should be soon, and we'll, you know, but you go to Eretz Yisrael. For me, one of the high points always of going to Eretz Yisrael, and for many of us, I'm sure you go to the Kaisel, you love them. And I like going, if I can, as the earliest opportunity, daven the first morning to daven Netz of the Kotel. And it's a very beautiful experience. Think about it. You know, the Kotel is one of the busiest places in the world. You can be there, it has a different feeling at different times of the day. You can be there 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, and suddenly a busload of yeshiva bachrim will suddenly appear, and they'll come, they'll dance. You know, it's a busy place. But there's one time in the day where it's totally quiet. When is it quiet at the Kotel one time in the day? Netzach Hamo. All the minyanim that happen to be there at that time, they get to Netz, whatever time it is, and suddenly the chazan, all the Baalei Tefillah, Baruch Atah Hashem, God Israel, sunrise, the same for all the minyanim, and there's silence. And then a few minutes later, the first Chazaras HaShatzta gets going again, then mayhem continues for the next 23 hours and 55 minutes. But there's that silence is the most powerful part of the day there, for me at least, in the Kotel. And that's really what Shimon, the son of Rav Gamliel, says in Pirkei Avos, in the first parak, Mishnah Yudayin, Kol yomai godalti ben hachachomim v'lo motzosi l'guf toi v'la shtika. Shtika is something very powerful. Silence is very powerful. And really, if you think about it, that's what Tu B'Shvat is. Tu B'Shvat, which we're celebrating tonight and tomorrow, you go out to the, certainly here in London, it's freezing cold, the trees are barren. Tu B'Shvat, you're celebrating the hidden. The trees have not yet borne fruit. The buds have not yet emerged. The sap is slowly making its way. It's the hidden, the silent, the potential. That's what Tu B'Shvat really is. And that's what the gaps in the Shira represent. Let me finish with one idea. At the end of the parasha. The end of the parasha, we have the parasha of Mon. Lechem min hashamayim. Says the pasuk, Vayim Hashem Moshe, Hinni mamti lochem lechem min hashamayim. I'm going to rain down on you Lechem min hashamayim, the mon, the yotzom, the liktu dvayim, the yoimei, they'll collect it. Leman anasenu hayelech b'seirosim lo. To see whether you're going to listen to my Torah, I'm going to test you. Anasenu. What exactly was the test of the mon? Rashi says, im yishmeru mitzvos hatzluyos bo, i.e., if they're going to keep all the mitzvahs that relate to the mon. Shelo yosirim menu, they're not allowed to leave over any. Velo yotzu b'shabbos lilko, they can't go out on Shabbos to collect it. The Ramban does not agree. He says, Ein lei nochen. Ein lei nochen, it's not true. I don't agree with that. Because the Ramban disagrees. He feels that the test is much broader than compliance with the specific instructions that relate to the mon. So what does the Ramban say? The Ramban says it's a much more broader, much more general test Nisoyin hulohem shelohoy biyot mazon. Think about it. Klal Yisrael did not have any food in the midbar. V'lo yiru lohem eitzah b'midbar rak hamon. All they had was the mon. Shelo yodu mitchilo. They'd never seen this material before. V'lo shamu me'avosam. They'd never seen this before. Never had it at home or growing up. V'yered lohem dvar yom b'yom v'yarivu elov. Literally, they would hunger. They would depend on it exclusively for food. V'im kol zeh shamu loleches achri Hashem v'lo mokum lechem. They went and they followed Hashem and they went out into the midbar, reliant on the provision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Are they going to have that? That was the general, and that really is the test of the mon, which is, of course, even till today. Now, the Or HaChaim gives a different shot. The Or HaChaim says something unbelievable. What was the test of the mon? What was the leman amasenu? Says the Or HaChaim, ki lechem min ha-shamayim lo yitzdarech shum tikun. This was ready-made, custom-made food that fell to your door or wherever it fell nearby, and you had nothing to do. You just took it in. It was ready to go. And therefore they had lots of free time. Etc. Says the Rechaim, you know what the test was? The test was, they don't have to cook, they don't have to go shopping, they don't have to do anything in the midbar. There was no laundry, there was no clothes, it was all ready made. Everything is on a plate for you. You're going to have lots of free time. Your test is, how are you going to use that leisure time? What a fascinating insight. And of course, it has resonance today. You know, today, the leisure time, you know, it's a good test, it's a good indicator of who the person is. How does he use his leisure time? What does he do with it? Theoretically, today, you know, we live in a world where the 5-day working week is the norm. So what do we do on a Sunday? A free day? You know, it's Israel, Sunday is not a free day. But Rebbe Yeshiva, one of the Mashkichim, used to say, Friday is a lo free day. Friday is not a free day. What do we do with our leisure time? Theoretically, we're living in a world where we should have so much more leisure time. You know, think about life 100 years ago, where you had to do the laundry. You'd go down to the river, you'd bring the buckets and the water, and it would be a day's work. Now we've got washing machines. We've got technology, which theoretically should make our lives so much easier. We've got click and deliver. You order Tesco online, they come deliver to you. Life should be easier. We've got freezers and fridges. I remember hearing from one Rav, sort of tongue in cheek, he says, nowadays we can make Shabbos once every 6 weeks. But yet, we have less time seemingly than we ever had. So it's a bit of a, it needs thought. But says the Or HaChaim, that the test of the mon was actually having lots of free time. Are we going to use it well? They were in the midbar for 40 years. They had received the Torah. It was an opportunity to learn Torah and to use time well. So therefore, the test of the mon is actually a very relevant and interesting thing to think about. Certainly for today, what exactly was the test? So what have we said? Four ideas that we've spoken about. Oz Yoshe, Moshe, why in the future tense? Rashi gives his pshat. But that beautiful idea of the fourth bell, Zareba, the Baron Rokach, that concept, that idea of Tchias HaMesim is rooted in Oz Yoshe. Because the Klal Yisrael, they came out, four-fifths did not come out. And in order to pick them up, in order to give them that rejuvenation, that feeling of positivity, of hope, they would be told that there is a concept of Tchias HaMesim. That please God, those who have departed will yet sing again. And that was what he did to sort of pick up his Hasidim in those terrible war years. Then you had that amazing Chasam Sofer, that why is it the Miriam sang, particularly at that point of the retribution of the Mitzrayim, not earlier? What is the explanation of that strange Medrash? And what is Pshat Afhein Hoy Boisamis? So that fantastic Chasam Sofer, that nature is Meshubat to Torah, and particularly to those who have higher Zuchus, etc. The sounds of silence, the gaps in the Shira. As Aaron Shaw said, the gaps represent they're the expression of those feelings that cannot be expressed. And sometimes the sound of silence, as Rabbi Emanuel felt, Rabbi Feldman felt those last 10 minutes of Yom Kippur, and Moshe Shapiro noted, are the sometimes stronger than any other words or noise that can be expressed. And that really is the perhaps the idea of Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is the celebration of the hidden, the silence, and the potential. And lastly, what exactly was the test of the mon? Rashi said, to rule, to go with the rules of the mod, not to leave over, not to collect on Shabbos. The Ramban says it's a much broader testing. Do you rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Panrasa? And the Rachaim says how to use your free leisure time. What a fabulous insight. Food for thought. Wish you all a very good Shabbos and thank you for listening. Kol Tov.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.